Okay. There it is. Okay. It is 6:01 p.m. on Tuesday, April 25th, 2023. We'll call the Common Council meeting to order. Let's stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Weigel, absent. Varga?
Here.
Middleton?
Here.
Crowder, absent. Romano?
Present.
In front of you are the minutes. Let's see if we have enough. Yes. Minutes from March 28th. And we do have a quorum present for that. So any changes or corrections on that one? Okay. Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, second by Tad. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous of those present. Next up is Ordinance 2023-4. Do I have a motion to read by title only?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, seconded by Jenny for the discussion. All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous of those present. Please read Ordinance number 2023-4 by title only.
Ordinance 2023-4. An ordinance amending Chapter 32 regarding the Board of Public Works for the City of Columbia City, Indiana.
As a reminder, this is the second reading of this ordinance. This is really just a cleanup ordinance to ensure that kind of everything that you know, the state has changed over time is just codified as a part of our ordinance. So, Marsha, is there anything else on that Board of Works ordinance that basically just codifying the state piece? That's right.
Yeah, just that.
It's effectively just restating the full ordinance and making sure that we're have all those pieces in there. So, any questions about that? Okay. Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve Ordinance number 2023-4 on second and final reading?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jenny, seconded by Jennifer. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous of those present. Thank you. So next up is Indiana Driving Record Card Project. Since Ed is not here, we will move that to the end of the agenda, and if he doesn't arrive, we'll table it. So next up is utility rate discussion. So I know that this has been something, when I was absent in February, I know that you all got a presentation from Baker Tilly, kind of about the overall concept of utilities, where we're at. As you may remember, one of the things that we have discussed in the past has been the idea of, instead of waiting till the last minute to do a big rate adjustment, instead take a yearly review of that, take a look at where prices are, take a look at what the cost is to, you know, do the services that we do, and then move forward with any kind of adjustments that we need to. As you are also well aware, the Utility Rate Advisory Board is a 5-member board made up of all of our rate customers, all citizens, no elected officials are on there, 4 from each of the 4 council districts, as well as 1 individual who is outside the city limits but is still a rate customer of ours through one of the utilities. And so they have reviewed the Baker Tilly plan that you all saw in that February meeting. And I know Lee Botts is here. Lee is the chairman of the Utility Rate Advisory Board. Lee, I'll go ahead and have you come on up. Council members, in your packet on, I've got to get there, page 6. Lee, are you going to read that kind of motion? Is that what you're?
I will.
Okay. That's okay. So, Lee, obviously, you want to maybe take 2 seconds to talk about the Utility Rate Advisory Board. You've been chairman since we recreated it, let's say it that way. So,
yeah, I am Lee Botts. I am the non-city resident member of the utility board. I am a customer of the Public City Electric Utility. And our board met with the mayor and city clerk or city treasurer and went through the Utility first 30 years. And and like as the mayor said, before you assumed regulation about your own utilities and something, it was very expensive to go down before the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission and present a case, have the case heard, and it was expensive both money and time. But when you voted a number of years ago to assume your own regulation, that process is not in place. And I want to say, since you voted to assume that responsibility yourself, we've had three major rate increases. We had the sewage had a major increase a number of years ago, mm-hmm. and that was primarily facing large capital expenditures for the operation and the separation of stormwater and the sewage. And then we had followed up a few years later with the water increase. That was the water utility for a number of years had just not been, rates had not raised. They were basically low on cash. If a major break or expenditure happened, they'd be in trouble. So it was to build up the cash reserve. And then the electric increase a couple of years ago. And that was deferred for a number of years. But rates had not increased for a number of years. It was a fairly large increase. It ended up being spread over 2 years or a month or two. And now this approach is doing something a little different. It's taking a look at all the utilities and making some recommendations. And after reviewing that, we came up to the and had a resolution. And I think you got copies of it in front of you. It's short. I'll read it for the public. But the Utility Rate Advisory Board recommends that the City Council approve the first year of the three-year plan for the water, sewage, and stormwater utilities as set forth in the February 10, 2023 rate study prepared by Baker Tilly Municipal Advisors. With respect to the electric utility, it is recommended that the City Council approve a 2% across-the-board increase in the city's base rates, excluding the wholesale base rate tracker, with the base rates being defined as the rates currently in effect, basically exclusive of the purchase power costs. And the third recommendation is we're recommending the first year of the plan be implemented to come back next year in our 2004-2005 and review. So it's a three-part recommendation. I want to say why we came to that recommendation. First, let me say that for the water, sewage, and stormwater, the rate increases in this proposal are very modest. They're in the neighborhood of 2 to 4% for the first year. That's when inflation over last year, we had a year ago, 8% changes in consumer price index. It's currently running about 5%. So we're looking at very modest, comparatively modest increases at a time when costs are going up basically everywhere. With respect to the electric utility, the major proposal, the electric rates are passed on in two ways. The city has a wholesale purchase power tracker. So changes in rates from their supplier, the Indiana Municipal Power Agency, mm-hmm. Pass through onto the customers. There's a bit of a delay, there's a quarterly delay, but those rates can go both up and down. Yeah. The report that Baker Tilly did really combined those utility rates and the tracker and recommended an increase. We recommend that we continue to keep them separately. So we recommend we leave the purchase power tracker alone, let it operate as it currently does, and then we recommend that a 2% increase in the base rate. So we may be components here we go. Again, 2%, we consider it to be a very modest increase at a time when, again, inflation was 8% a year ago, 5% now, and we're coming in recommending a 2% increase.
Thanks, Lee. Now you know why he's the chairman of the Utility Rate Advisory Board, okay? No, I really appreciate the work, Lee, that you and the Utility Rate Advisory Board has done on this. I do think we're probably unique in some ways that we have a citizen-led board that gives these recommendations to the council. Certainly, I very much concur with what Lee has said. I think one of the things that we were all hoping to get out of this yearly review is to be able to be more responsive to changes in the market instead of again, waiting till that last minute. And as you well know, prices for just about everything is up, which means when we're buying new transformers, when we're buying new pipes, when we're buying new pumps, all those things are up significant dollars. And I'll lean on the on Mike Shoda, Mike Cook, Kelly a little bit on that, of just about the overall price increases that have happened in a lot of the things that you're doing. Do you guys want to maybe mention some of that? I know I'm putting you on the spot, but I know, do you want to mention some of the increases that you guys are seeing in your supply lines, if you will?
The chlorine goes up. It seems like it's going up monthly.
Monthly.
I mean, yeah. What we used to pay $80 for, now we're paying per tank, now we're paying about $180 a tank. I mean, and the brass prices are and if you can get them, you know, so.
It's both raising the price and delaying how long until you actually get that material. Which then, actually, most of those things, if they delay until you get the material, sometimes they can jack up the price even further.
You cannot, on pipe, on anything, we cannot get a cost just anymore. It is the cost when it is delivered. So, you know.
And I don't know, Kelly and or Mike down on the other end, if you guys want to talk anything.
Some of our equipment, the one pumps I have on order that probably won't be here, I ordered them in November of last year. They won't be here until September of August of this year. Probably before that would have been maybe between $15,000 and $17,000 pump, and I probably get about $30,000 in it now. So it's just crazy. And then the lead times are ridiculous, and we needed it yesterday, but we're not just we're at the mercy of them. So.
Kelly, I don't know if you...
I would agree with that. I mean, the delayed times on getting material and things like that, plus just the almost double of cost on some of the stuff. But, I mean, that's going along with vehicles and stuff, too. I mean, you know, stuff that we should have been able to get this spring vehicle-wise, some of that's, like, next year still out. So.
And I know Sean, as I think maybe he's reported before, has talked about not only doubling of cost, but also 52-week lead times, you know, things like that. So, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, nobody likes to do anything with the rates. I think the measured approach is a lot better than waiting until the last minute than really jacking up rates. But I think the other piece of that is you know, we are mandated by the state of Indiana to run solvent utilities that are not gaining a ton of profit, because we don't do profit at the city level like this, but at the same time isn't in the negative, right? And so I think that's always the challenge that we have as managers of the utility, and they do as well, is to really continue that balance of not really, you know, not going overboard in the rate increases, but at the same time making sure we're above water when it comes to that debt, especially the debt-to-income ratio that we have. Most of the projects, as you guys are all well aware, are projects that are either mandated by the federal government in some way, shape, or form, or are things of just failing parts of our system. It's we don't really do the luxury thing here, you know. And so that really is kind of a balancing act. But I'm sorry, I've talked too much. But anyways, is there any questions you have of Lee here today?
I would like to say one thing.
Sure, please.
The study recommended a three-year approach. Mm-hmm. We're recommending the implementation of the first year.
Yes.
And I think this is a new approach. Mm-hmm. We're entering this cautiously.
Yeah.
And it would see how it goes and give you a chance a year from now to review it.
Sure. And just so you know, the Utility Rate Advisory Board typically meets in that January-February time frame. Reviews the rates, and then usually we'll, you know, if this continues the trend, if you will, then we'll come forward with a recommendation in some way, shape, or form in this general time frame to, you know, potentially get implemented by July. But go ahead, Ted.
So when would the approximate start date be for the increase rate? Like soon or?
So from a time frame perspective, I'll turn it over to Lee here in a second, but from a time frame perspective, so this is the meeting where the Utility Rate Advisory Board gives you a recommendation.
Okay.
If you all want to kind of have a ordinance crafted based on that recommendation, then Marcia and Baker Tilly can kind of do that.
Okay.
But there is a schedule we obviously have to follow in regards to the public participation stuff, which we want to do that. So, Rosie.
We have a process we have to follow, and right now I have the public hearing and the final rate ordinance read on June 13th.
Okay.
But we wouldn't put it into effect until the reading in July.
Okay. And then Lee would, so you guys would review this annually about this time of the year?
I'm sorry, say that again.
That he would review, so let's say we go ahead and implement this first year, so a year from now, you'd.
Yeah, we'd be reviewing and looking at the plans and then looking at the financial results.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure if this is a better question for you or for you, but if things continue to go up as they seem to be, is it possible that we would need more of a rate increase the second time?
So I think the way in which it's been laid out is to try to do kind of steps along the way, if you will. So I think the first one that's being discussed is it's about $6, right, overall? Something like that. Yeah, I know. But does that take the base out? Does that take that tracker out? Okay, that's what I'm wondering. So I think it'll end up being it's going to be less than $6 per month overall. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind here. So here's where the challenge comes in. The challenge comes in is that in a lot of places they get an electric bill from this company, they get a wastewater bill from this company, they get a water bill from this company, right? For our customers, we get everything at once, right? So so anytime we're doing anything, it's an impact obviously on the bill, whereas you know, with this kind of plan, if you will, we're still be lower than our friends in REMC, Northeastern REMC on the electric side. We're still going to be lower than like our friends in Cherubusco on the drinking water side. So, I mean, again, we're going to still be really comparable, as I think Baker Tilly showed you in those plans. Mm-hmm. But I think that's why kind of taking that as a year-by-year approach of saying, okay, let's look at the finances, as Lee said. Let's figure out what that looks like and then make some decisions going forward of is this the right – is this where we need to be? Do we need to be less? Do we need to be more? Where does that look – where is that at? But I think that's the approach. Instead of saying we're going to just go ahead and implement a three-year increase over time right now, we'll just do it in one fell swoop, I just think this is a more responsive and responsible approach to do this every single year. Does it hurt? Yes, it hurts. But I think it's also much more responsible to our residents. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah,
I don't know if I
much.
Did. Okay.
Yeah.
And Tad, I think
yeah.
you got
no,
the timeline right.
Yep.
Okay. Any other questions of Lee?
No, Lee? Thank you to you and to the committee for.
And Karen, too. Thank you for your service on that board, too. Appreciate it. Okay. So. Is it the will of the council to move forward with the recommendation of the Utility Rate Advisory Board, have the ordinance? Again, keep in mind, you're not approving the ordinance now. Instead, you're having the ordinance crafted that will go through the normal process of public input and all the stuff we normally do. Yes?
Yeah, I would move that we make a motion to have Marcia craft an ordinance.
Okay.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer to craft the ordinance. Second by Tad for the discussion. All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It's unanimous of those present. So we will go ahead and move to craft that ordinance. Okay. Thank you again, Utility Rate Advisory Board, for your work on that. I'm going to bounce back up to item number 6, which is Indiana Driving Record Card Project. Ed, come on up. Please introduce yourself and look forward to your presentation. And we are missing two council members tonight. I apologize. So you can just put them here. We'll get them collected and get them over to them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We will need to make sure we get that. I will not on that open. Sorry, I'm going to make sure that. I know. The floor is yours, sir.
All right. I apologize. I thought the meeting was at 7, so I better run it. Mr. Mayor, Councilor, Worthy Treasurer, members of the Columbus City Council, department heads, and of course the general public. I come here on behalf of Navos Unida and for all of those from my city and yours, and from corner to corner of this great state, that live in fear and anxiety every day because they must drive, and yet they know that it is illegal. The undocumented and those that are not able to comply with the current DMV requirements to obtain a state-issued identification card or a driver's license, they have real needs, just like you and I. These folks must work. They need to feed and clothe and shelter their families. Their children need to go to school, and on occasion, they need to seek medical aid. We enjoy the luxury of being able to use the local resources, such as our wonderful libraries. They cannot, because they do not have a form of identification to prove who they are. This evening, Navos Unida requests that you please consider a resolution from the City of Columbia City in support of Bill Proposal Number 248. This proposal was under committee investigation last summer, and it finally went into Homeland Security and Transportation Committees and passed by a vote of 5-4. Now, this proposal has been in the works for years and fails due to what the legislative body considers a lack of support. Recently, it stalled once again at the appropriation stage. This truly is a bipartisan effort. Senator Blake Doriot of Goshen, a Republican, Senator David Nagowski of South Bend, a Democrat, Senator Linda Rogers of Granger, another Republican, for a total of 9 Republicans and 2 Democrats that are co-sponsoring this effort. Navos Unida has been working to meet with senators and representatives all across northern Indiana to ask for their support and advocacy. With their busy schedules, it has been a real struggle to pursue them. And now, we've taken the approach of asking leaders such as yourselves to provide us with this type of a resolution that will serve as a symbol of the support and advocacy that Columbia City offers to the proposal now known as the Driving Privilege Card Program. As we move into the packet that Navos Unida has provided you, I'll start off with the first 2 documents, Safer Roads, A Stronger Indiana, and the fact sheet. So the fact sheet is a quick reference and bullet point document that really explains things really clearly, quick reference document. And then the second one is a very well-written description of the proposal in an easy-to-read format, explaining all of the benefits behind this program. Both of these documents, by the way, were prepared by the students at the University of Notre Dame. The third document is an article from the National Conference of State Legislators, and this does a tremendous job of enlisting all of the details of all of the states that have passed this proposal into law. There's one state missing out of all of these, and that's the great state of Minnesota that in January passed this proposal into law, for a total now of 19 states across the United States that are now allowing this type of program to exist. The fourth document is one that, with your permission, Mayor, I'd like to read through because it really is the heart of our program and our presentation. This document was put together by one of the members of Navos Unida, Lidia Figueroa. And it's important that you guys all know that when we speak publicly, we state only the facts. The last thing we want is misinterpretation, misinformation, or worse, rumors on this type of a proposal. So we start off by saying this. This important information requires to obtain a driver's registration card in Indiana. Only eligible individuals will be able to apply for this card. It is very important that each individual meet all of the requirements to obtain one. The individual is required to be living in the state of Indiana for at least 1 year to be eligible to apply. The individual has to provide documents of proof of paying Indiana state taxes. Some eligible individuals can apply for what's called an individual tax identification number, an ITIN, through the Internal Revenue Services as a method of paying their taxes. The individual would possibly be fingerprinted. All individuals applying for a driver's card will study the regulations, all the signs, traffic signals, and pass a written exam at the BMV. All individuals will also have to pass an actual driving test with a BMV instructor. The card at this point will only be valid for 1 year. At that point, it will be reviewed and all of the documentation will be required again. I think this is really the component that's the most important of it all. This card cannot be used for identification purposes, cannot be used to vote. It cannot be used to even pass security at an airport, much less fly on an airplane. It cannot be used to drive in other states. So those are things that are very, very important about this program. Finally, at the end, there are 11 resolutions for you to peruse that give you a very, very good understanding of all of the things that all of the cities, I should say, towns and cities, that have provided us with their support and advocacy, same as what we're asking for you folks to do. We start off with South Bend. This is a city of 104,000 residents. Hammond, 77,000 residents. East Chicago, 26,000. Goshen, 35,000. Plymouth, 10,000. Elkhart, 54,000 residents. Warsaw, 16,000. Logansport, 18,000. Ligonier and Bremen, about the same, 4,000. And North Manchester has also passed a resolution in support of this bill. In that packet, Mayor, is also a letter that was distributed by Mayor Jerry Stutzman. I think he just recently retired.
Yeah, he is stepping away, yes, yes.
And you'll see your name on there in support of this effort, and we appreciate that, the fact that you joined forces with Mayor Stutzman, or Jerry now. I also included an article that is a very, very good article written by a reporter up in Kendallville about 2 months ago. It really, this reporter did a fantastic job really researching this program and has a lot of information here in terms of numbers. I'd like to try and match the young man that came up here before me, but I can't memorize all these numbers. There's a lot of great information in there. And then finally, the summary of the Senate bill that's proposed down in Indianapolis for you to review. I'd like to talk real quick about a couple of things, three things that are always mentioned as we present, no matter where we go. And maybe this isn't appropriate, but I'm a Republican. I'm extremely conservative in nature. And so when I talk to folks from my party, we all say the same thing. This is a country of law and order. And most of these folks are here undocumented. They're not here with permission. Why would we give them the privilege to drive in our streets? So I agree, a country of law and order. These folks are going to drive, whether we want them to or not. They're going to drive. Would it not be better for us to try and harness those drivers, teach them our laws, force them to go through a driving instructor, through the BMV, have the BMV vettable, and more importantly, they will have to carry full coverage insurance on their vehicles, where right now they're not. Sheriff Redman, the sheriff from St. Joe County, shared some information with me. Maybe you guys are already aware of this. At any given point in the state of Indiana, there are over 900,000 drivers that are suspended licenses, and they're driving. SR-22 is the most expensive insurance that an individual can buy. These folks cannot and are not carrying any insurance, and they're out driving. They're citizens of our country. Again, would it not be in our best interest to harness those folks and force them and vet them and make them comply rather than just allowing this to continue? The other thing is the voting. So the BMV, the Chamber of Commerce, the Indiana State Police, you name it, I mean, the list is just huge of folks that are involved in this at the state level that have even had discussions of making this card be round so that when someone walks in and attempts to vote, that will immediately flag that is not a valid identification because we're all accustomed to our driver's licenses. So those are the two key points, I think. Identification, the reason behind it, if we think 9/11, that's what they're trying to prevent, is not allow this card to be used for identification purposes. If we had our chief of police here, I'm sure.
Yep, Gary.
I'm sure he would stand up and say, you know what, I support these things. We've got much more important things to do than to deal with an infraction of driving without a license and all of the paperwork and all of the headache. I'm sure you would agree. And you guys have a small population that lives in Columbus City. But nonetheless, we have folks that come through here all the time, business owners, people that are moving through all the time through here. And I don't know how big the problem is or isn't. But as we look at the state level, this is what we're trying to minimize and use those resources much more productively. So with that, I appreciate your time, and thank you for bearing with me a little bit. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to try and answer.
Okay. So just so obviously you saw my support of this, we as the AIM Board of Directors are also supportive of this idea. Again, I think it comes down to a lot of the concerns that we had individually, you know, obviously were addressed. This can't be used for voting. It can't be used for this. Can't be used for that. It's really specifically for the purpose of trying to protect you and me when it comes to our insurance, our driver's insurance. When we, you know, in the unfortunate case where we get hit by someone who is who doesn't have an ID and isn't driving less necessarily legally, you know, this provides an opportunity that those individuals can get that insurance, can drive legally, if you will, with those precautions and those standards set in place. And yes, we were all disappointed that it didn't move through the legislature this year. But I do think from the broader perspective is I do think this is a way in which we can wedge gap. We can bridge that gap between, you know, the kind of the citizenship piece, but also the practicality of this. I did not know until you came in that places like Warsaw, North Manchester, and others have already signed on to this kind of thing. I think that's great. I know that did you give a presentation in Huntington most recently?
Yeah.
I thought so, because I did speak a little bit with Mayor Strick down there, and he had said that conversation went really well also.
Yeah, we actually have appointments set now with Bloomington.
Okay.
We have appointments set with Frankfurt. Been trying to get into Muncie. That's I don't know what happens down there.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But you know, we're obviously working towards Fort Wayne.
Sure.
You know, number two in the state.
Sure.
Know, trying to meet with those folks and try to get this kind of support.
Well, at the end of the day, we have 30,000 vehicles that come through this community every single day on US 30. And that doesn't count State Road 9, State Road 109, State Road 205, right? That's just on US 30. And we know there's a lot of people going from Fort Wayne to Chicago every day on US 30 through our city limits. And I'm sure there's a decent percentage of those people that fit into this category, right? So, anyways, I'm sorry. I'm very long-winded tonight. I apologize. Council members, do you have questions, thoughts, concerns that you want to share with them?
I don't at this time. I just like to peruse it through everything.
Okay.
And,
sure.
I should mention, now that you brought up Huntington, I think I brought up Huntington. In Huntington, you know, every time we go to a different city, we learn because of the questions, you know, that folks come up with. It's important that you guys understand Senate Bill 248 died in February of this year. And so it doesn't get taken up until January 2024. So So I tell you these things because what we're trying to do and the reason that this is not passed is because the groups that were working towards this would cease. As soon as it died, no more efforts until the next year. And with reason, the senators are saying there's no support because there's nothing behind it. So we are not stopping this year. We will continue to visit all of these cities that we can because, as I said earlier, this is a symbol of the support that a city has in favor of this type of legislation. And so, again, that was one of the points that was brought up in Huntington. Well, it's dead. Come see us in 2024. And that's fine, too. I'd be glad to come back in 2024. But what we're trying to do is do precisely what the mayor said. I didn't know these other cities were doing this. It really helps us build a case when we're starting to say, oh, you mean those guys did it? Well, those guys did it. I want to do it, too. That's just what we're trying to accomplish. And again, there's nothing hidden here. I'm glad that you want to read through it because that's important. And I'm available if you guys have any questions, even on a one-on-one, I'd be glad to come back. I'm guessing that we'll table this until 2 weeks.
Sure, or whenever the council decides to put it on the agenda, yeah. Okay. But, yeah, obviously we have two other members that are not here,
yeah. So
I want to make sure that they also can read through that information. But, yeah, I whatever the council's will is, you know, certainly. Any other questions or thoughts? I was going to say, Chief,
do you happen to have another packet?
I do.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, any questions? I'm sorry.
Anybody else need a packet?
I don't know any other. we have one for Dan and Walt. So, any other questions from the department head?
Do you have any questions?
Not right now. I'd just like to review this state bill and see what's up. I guess I'm a little. How do we require these folks to do this? I mean, if they're not doing it now, is there some consequences or something that?
Well, right now, of course, as you well know.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm saying if this does pass. And it's available, what makes them want to go do it?
These people, if you knew just one, I wish the group was here. I thought it was at 7, so everybody's en route. You've got mothers that are taking their kids to school that are being pulled over by the local police and, you know, handcuffed in front of their children. These people are just scared to death. And we're looking for a simple, just it's a privilege. This is not a right by no means. We pay $17.50 for a driver's license, and it's good for 5 years. And so these folks are going to have to pay, the number that's being tossed around is $50 for 1 year. So when we start talking about revenue, you know, you're talking $250 over the course of 5 years. Plus, they're having to come back with the documentation and
every
be
year.
Vetted again. But if we can relieve that fear and anxiety, they will line up and do this. They just want to comply. And that's what this program would bring to them is to be in compliance.
I think for me the bigger issue is the insurance piece.
Yeah.
I mean, because again, I cannot imagine how much insurance companies pay out or even our citizens pay out in a lot of ways because of the lack of insurance by many of these individuals. And just if we can bridge even 25% of that gap, I bet the numbers are overwhelming. I bet the pure dollar value is overwhelming when it comes to the insurance piece, personally. But Chief, Fire Chief LaRue.
First of all, I appreciate you saying you're a Republican and you're conservative. Likewise, I'm very conservative. I'll tell you, personal opinion, I'm sitting in this position, I love it. I've seen the undocumented drivers out on the road that we end up messing or going and cleaning up their mess.
Yeah.
Let's get them insured. Let's do something.
That's the biggest component is the, what do you call it, hit and runs, fleeing the scene or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're scared to death. And so if they had this program in place where they would say, I'm compliant.
I'm insured.
I have insurance. One of the questions that was brought up, I think, down in Logansport is, okay, that's great that they have this card, and that's great now, you know, but we still can't communicate. Mm-hmm. And the police chief down there said, hey, if I've got that card, that's what I'm after right there. And if I've got an insurance card, I'm golden now. So you're right. I mean, that insurance is a huge component.
That and they learn our laws. The other thing, about 25 years ago, a predominant person in this community was killed by a man who bought a black market driver's license in Chicago. Let's get them taught.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, based on the timing of this meeting, I'm assuming that some of us will still be here around 7 o'clock. So if your people do get here, maybe some of us are willing to stick around and chat, maybe not in the formal setting, but chat. So,
actually, I do have a question, Ed, while Tom was talking. So have you guys put together, like, a pro forma, like, what your expected number of people that would sign up for something like this in the future be? Just, like, spitballing it, you know, just...
Yeah,
it, you know, process just curious.
I tell you, the real, real problem with that is folks live in the shadows. Mm-hmm. And even when we talk about a census, you know, I don't know that I can even make a census.
No, and that's fine. I just didn't know if there had been any, like, formal projections,
yeah.
I guess.
Here's the number that we're using. So Indiana is 7 million in the entire state of Indiana. So we use 25%. Is Hispanic. As a rule,
sure, yeah.
25% of that.
Sorry.
If you do the math, you know, we're, I don't know, 1.4 million, somewhere right in there, maybe 2 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we use, in our community, we use about half are undocumented. So we could easily say we're talking about a million folks out there. And you appreciate that. With Biden and those borders, this just keeps growing. And again, they're going to come, whether we want it to happen or not. And so at some point, we've got to find a way to harness this.
Let me just add on to my question.
Okay.
I mean, I guess based off, like, what they've done in California and out in the Northeast, what type of numbers they've had based, you know, in comparison to their overall population, if you can use that as kind of like a projection.
So there was one state, I believe it was Massachusetts, kind of put a black mark on this program, because there's a cost associated. You know, my wife. there's a cost associated with the program.
Yeah.
The BMV has tagged it in the state of Indiana at $1.2 million. So the black mark that happened with this paper on Massachusetts.
It's easy to do, but keep going.
Yeah. The number was very similar.
Oh, okay.
You know, it was kissing $1 million just to roll it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the course of 4 years, I don't just use that $250 number.
Mm-hmm.
1,000 people got the card. Mm-hmm. You'll never hit that $1 million mark like that. And we believe that it was because of fear. And so one of the other things that I've also seen our group is doing is we go to these communities and we'll bring in 400 people.
Mm-hmm.
And we go over this information that is, so that it's very clear. And, you know, when you tell somebody you may not qualify, start playing by the rules. Mm-hmm. That's the subliminal message there is you got to start playing by the rules. No more going to Illinois. No more of that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're a group that is trying to get things on the right path. Mm-hmm. But as I said in my presentation, you know, when we have legislators that say that there's no support, in one sense they're right. But let's get practical here. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're really looking out for the greater good of the city of Indiana. So that'd be a number to use for about a million folks.
Okay.
That should be used in this program.
Again, I'm guessing that number, the 250,000, right? 250 times 1,000, right?
Yeah.
that number doesn't take into account the insurance piece of it. That's why I keep coming back to.
That
would be such a
very large,
bigger chunk of, you know. But again, it's hard to tell because you don't know how many of those would have gotten an accident or did get an accident that maybe those kind of things. There's a lot of happenstance.
Now,
but
the
still.
Estimates that the students at the University of Notre Dame put together is if everything were to work out the way it's supposed to, all of our rates should drop by $25 a year. That's just a number. I don't know how they came up with that, but that's the number that they come up with.
If implemented.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, that article that this reporter at Kendallville put together, you guys read that, yeah. You'll be like, wow, that's some staggering numbers.
Yeah.
And,
Jennifer.
My question was pretty much covered. I was just curious about the degree of fear, even if this is passed, that they would be concerned about applying for this, and then am I on a list now?
Right. So that's a great question. And we addressed that in our information sessions. We addressed that because you're probably aware of this, but the BMV is a state agency. So in the state of Indiana, we have our BMV. Ohio has theirs, and boom, 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 just go across the country. The FBI is a federal agency. ICE, federal agencies. These folks don't share databases. Now, we've all seen in the news, databases can get hacked every day, probably by high school freshmen.
Yeah.
So nothing is secure. But we do tell our folks that, you know what, you need to be open to get these cards because there's a benefit, and that's really what we're after. We're really after this insurance component at the end of the day. And right on the heels of that is the education. You know, I want you to be able to know what yellow means on a sign, what orange means, what white means, what green. And just by knowing the colors, you should know what this signifies. And at this point, it's not happening. So that's really what we're trying to harness is that kind of knowledge.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your presentation. Appreciate it. And council, go ahead and go through the information, and then we'll get it scheduled if you want to get it scheduled, and we'll move forward that way. So thank you again.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate
it very much. Okay. Next up on the agenda is parking issues. Tad, I think you asked for this.
Well, yeah, I think we received an email from a resident regarding parking issues, and I invited Dina, and I don't think any of you or Dina?
No.
To come and present what her issues were, but she hasn't shut up. But it was there on Spencer Street across from the Catholic Church there, Gary, where I think we did something with this like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, so I think there was discussion. Now, again, kind of precedent, if you will, from this council has been that if someone wants to do no parking on one side or no parking at all, that typically it's something where we ask the resident to go get the signatures from their neighbors and then bring it back in that regard, right? If they want something to be done, they really need to be proactive in their own neighborhood with their own neighbors and bring that information to us. With that being said, I don't know that step ever happened. I know there was discussion about that, but I know that Gary has kind of been keeping an eye since we got those emails of kind of that area. So I don't know, Gary, if you want to, like, address maybe Ted's or at least Dina's concerns that was brought to us.
Yeah. About 6 months or so ago, Kelly sent me a picture of this complaint.
Mm-hmm.
There's a vehicle on the west side of the drive and a vehicle on the east side of the drive. Went out there. You know, the kind of elevated house, so when they come down the hill, you know, at that time they were saying a visual. There wasn't any obstructions at that time when we went out there, but so you couldn't really tell the obstruction. But I do know personally that I come down line, turn left on Spencer, and a lot of times if there's a car there wanting to pull out, and if there is a vehicle set in there, it's a little difficult to get onto Line Street, onto Spencer Street, without backing up onto Line Street. So my recommendation was maybe from the east side of their driveway, which would include the driveway, to Line Street, would put no parking sign there maybe, and instead of making it the whole block.
Mm-hmm.
That way it would open that up, and as they're coming down, they could look to the left and see that nothing's coming. And I mean, that was just And again, Kelly and I drove out there today. There was one car parked on the side of the street in that whole block, but that was a.
I would think it would be a good time to look at it during Mass.
Yeah, we did talk about that. And I think that's the other interesting thing about that area is that that house is the only one between Line Street and, I guess, that driveway. So there's no other houses that are parked in that area. But I agree. I think probably the busiest times are going to be Sunday and when?
Saturday.
And I'm not Catholic, so I don't know when they meet.
Saturday and Sunday.
Okay, right. Saturday and Sunday and yes. Whatever other night. So, you know, to me, there really isn't, like, I guess as I look at that area, there really isn't a reason for anybody really to be parking in that segment of the street. Because when there is, you know, Mass happening, they have a big parking lot and there are surrounding streets and things like that. Plus, that does get really congested as you're around that area. But So I guess I don't know what you want to do with it.
Well, I just wanted to bring it up for discussion because I remember talking about it years ago, and I thought we made part of, from the driveway to the corner that you couldn't park there, and I think it was just painted yellow. Or again, this has been a few years ago. Yeah. Does that ring a bell, yellow. Kelly? Or
yeah, it's. I mean, Community Corrections usually does the curb painting, but. I mean, it's faded right now a little bit.
Yeah.
But really, beyond that, it probably should be something with some teeth and have an ordinance drafted up that states that there wouldn't be any, you know, if we're going to put a sign there or something like that. Because yellow paint, I don't think you guys can enforce that.
Right.
So it's just a suggestion, basically.
Okay. So I think we did do the yellow paint before, but yeah. Didn't put the signs up. Maybe that's what it was. So, I mean... I agree. I don't know why. I mean, if that's the only house there, I mean, I don't know if this is something we need to handle in our parking committee or.
I mean, it could be if you want to take it to the parking committee to have that conversation. I'll trust that that happens. The other side of that is we can just amend our traffic or our parking ordinance and include that segment if you'd like. And obviously, still got it has to go through the two readings and all that kind of stuff. But. I mean, if it's the will of the council to do that, I don't have any problem with it. And if that's what Gary thinks the best thing to do is...
I think it would be good to just move on it.
Okay. Jenny, are you okay with it?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Is that the coming this way, the big house on the yellow...
The house that's on the... It would be on the southeast corner of Line and Spencer Street.
Yeah, it used to be yellow. Or it's still. Yeah.
I think it's yellowish. It's still
yeah.
Yellow.
But there's a driveway that comes off of Spencer there.
Right.
So basically, it'd be from Line to the east edge of that driveway would be a no parking zone.
On Line.
On Spencer Street. Yes.
Yeah, because I drove it twice today, and there were no cars both times I drove it.
Yeah.
But I do. I take that same route when I'm.
Yeah, going through
school or whatever. So
I try to avoid Spencer Street because there's usually so many cars parked on the sides when I go through that
yeah.
it's a little bit of a bob and weave. So
I mean, think you all guys those have houses any... though have driveways.
Yes,
to
they
park
do.
On.
Yeah.
Yes, they all have. I think they all do. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there any reason why we should not go through that?
I guess I didn't look at the north side of the street.
I was going to say the north side.
That's
I don't
the know. Church.
No.
Do the north side all have off-street parking, though?
If we did the whole block.
I don't know about that one. I know the south side does.
Yeah,
I know
I
the north side
do.
Does.
I know I do. The south side does have off-street
okay.
parking. But
well, I don't think... So when I drove through there today, there was no parking signs on the north side of that.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought you were asking if we... Or,
I don't know.
We did that whole
we were peppering you with questions, Gary. It's not fair.
If we did that whole stretch, are we still just talking about the one piece from the driveway to Line Street?
The one piece.
Yeah. That's what
I think that's what the council's talking
yeah,
about. It's just
yeah.
from the east
right.
side of that driveway on Spencer Street back to Line Street.
I feel
that
like
whole
that would
segment.
Mitigate some of the problem there.
I think
I
so.
Think so too. And I think it would help Line Street get off.
Clear that kind of chute up a little bit. Yeah.
I think part of the problem too, I mean, in addition to how busy it gets through there sometimes, is also I noticed in the pictures that she sent, it was during trash time. And so people were, there was a bunch of trash.
Oh.
There, and people were like inset another.
Oh, gotcha.
Into the street for their
gotcha.
Own parking. So it just made a kind of congested situation
okay.
worse.
Yeah.
We can share.
Okay. Well.
We have copies of the emails that we can.
Yeah. I can forward that to you. Sure. Sure. Yeah, I can. And I can certainly help with that, yeah.
Okay.
Well, we'll work on that, Council.
Okay.
We'll work on that. Okay. That's all I have on the agenda, so we'll do department head reports. Chip.
Just a couple quick updates. Softball started last night down at Morse's Park, and baseball started tonight. Bids for Eagle Park came in a tad high. There, is that better? Well, he got on me for saying a little high, so I throw in a tad
high. It's more than a little high, to be very clear.
I'm a little more than a little.
Other than that, I have nothing else.
Questions of Ted. I mean, I'm sorry. Questions of Chip. I mean, I guess if you have questions of Ted.
I do have
all right, go ahead, Jennifer.
Chip, do you have any kind of update on the community art project?
Mayor and I talked about it. We're going to go after getting approval from the business owners just so they don't really get worked up about having paintings in front of on their curbs.
Do you have an estimate of how soon that would be?
Give me 2 weeks and I'll have it.
People are getting antsy.
I know.
Thank you. Mike.
I've got several things. I'll go as quick as I can. The first two, I'll just kind of group them together. During the Board of Works meeting, did get approval to move forward with the Forest Main and Pump projects at Main and Jefferson, and also got approval for RPR services with Engineering Resources Incorporated with their inspector that we've worked with in the past. So I want to thank the Board again for that. Met with Midwestern Engineers on the CSO project out at the treatment plant. They done a concrete pour on the wall out there, and I was not happy the way it looked. Had a lot of honeycomb, had some holes in it. So they had their structural engineer come up, inspected it, didn't find anything structurally, only cosmetic. And I received, I believe that went out today for their how to correct it and patch that up. Then I've also requested, instead of a one-year warranty, a two-year warranty on it, so an extension on the warranty. And then I've also requested that it be inspected again by the engineering firm after their patching is complete, just to make sure that they don't patch it and cover it a third. Let's see, they should be setting the concrete base for the new sampler, and then this year we're doing something different along with John Goetz and Austin. They inspect all the grease traps around the city. This year, the businesses, they will be issued written warnings if they don't have the correct documentation on site that they're supposed to. They all know what they're supposed to have as far as having them cleaned, and then when they go back and they do them again, if it is the second time the same, they will be fined the second time.
We've been having
a lot of grease backups in the city and things like that, mm-hmm. So we're going to start cracking down on it.
Yep.
So just to help Kelly and his guys out, that we've heard a lot that Austin's been out, so I told him to go ahead and move forward with that written warnings this year, and next year we'll be fines. So all our cranes that have had their annual inspections by Breha, all our lab equipment has annual inspections by DR Lab Services. Lowers compressors, annual inspections by Tracy Compressed Air. And we will work on air release valve number 6 and 7 on the SDI Forest Main tomorrow to correct some issues there. Unless you have questions, that was it. That was as fast as I could go.
Questions of Mike? Thank you, Mike. Kelly.
We've been working with the water department on a storm line up on Van Buren Street and fixed a couple spots on that with helping those guys out. And then we decided just to take a sketch basin out and figure out what was going on there. Did that yesterday with our crew, and hopefully that'll work better now. We have a ramp to pour back there and some other concrete work that we'll be doing in-house. We had to fix a sanitary sewer main along Old Trail last week, and then we worked on a sanitary sewer manhole out on Countryside Trailer Court that was clear full of roots, and still have a sanitary sewer repair work and televising and cleaning to do in Columbia Shores yet. Our jet machine's going to be going over to Brown Equipment to get worked on. We have about four things going on with that we need to get corrected. Limb pickup will start next week, and then appliance pickups the day after limb pickup, that we'll be picking up appliances, and then we're running a sweeper uptown, getting ready for events to start. So.
Questions to Kelly? Thank you. Tom?
101 had a differential leak in the front of it. Adam, the mechanic, came down, looked at it. We thought it was just the front seal. He took it to his shop to replace that, and chocolate milk-looking grease came out of the differential, which means it was mixed with water. So we, upon further investigation, Adam ended up tearing this thing apart down in the shop, pulling the axle, rear axles out of it, flushed it out, checked all the bearings and stuff. A differential has a breather on the top, and the overflow for the tank is over top of that, and if that breather gets stuck open, it was just letting water go down there. So he replumbed that. Everything other than the only thing he really had to replace was the grease and the front seal. Everything else checked out okay, which, thank goodness. 102 is going to have to go in for brakes. He's going to come get that, I think, next week. Last week we did a dual training with Columbia Township at the burn facility. I want to thank the council and Board of Works again for that facility. The amount of training that we're able to do there is just incredible. So thank you again. Air packs were tested last week. We tested ours, and the water department has four for when they work with their chlorine. There's a lifetime warranty. We do have one pack that was sent in for repair, and I said it came back this week. So that's good. The generator that I reported on said it was in. It is in. It's just not functioning. So we're kind of waiting for a part, I guess, to make this thing work. And during storm season, it's not the best time to not have a generator for the firehouse, but we'll get by. Gas meters are in. They're in my office. We are having some difficulties getting a hold of the salesman to come help with the install and do training on them. Reese is going to contact his boss if the guy doesn't answer tomorrow and say, hey, we need help. And then our lateral process is still open until next Friday.
Question of time. Thank you. Terry?
We've got a network outage scheduled for Sunday from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. to update our VMware, which controls all of our servers. So we'll be taking about 9 of those down and updating them and bringing them back up hopefully pretty quickly. We got some major projects that are just waiting on approval, so until we get that, we're holding out on those. That's all I have.
Question to Terry. Thank you. Mike?
We've had several new build construction where we've had hookups. One of them is pretty good size out here at the new jail facility that they're building, and also on Emancipation Court is we had a 30-inch tile collapse, storm drain, and that's why we've had a couple complaints out there on Lincoln Way where the water's not draining down in that yard very fast. That's why it is. We've got that to be replaced also.
Question of mine. Thank you. Gary.
Officer Campbell and Officer Thomas graduated from the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy this past Friday, so welcome them back if you see them, and glad to have them back on the schedule. Officer Justin Cornejo started Monday. His actual start date is Saturday, but his first work day was yesterday, so he seems to be pleased with this move. He's a lateral from Garrett. And we had 23 applications. We had 7 withdrawals or no-shows. And we have 3 laterals moving on to the interview process, and out of the balance of those that didn't show up, we only had 3 pass all the testing. So down to a small pool again for choices. So we got 6 interviews and 4 spots. So we're struggling a little bit with that, so we may be opening up another process if we aren't able to get enough out of this pool. So dispatch, they're kind of in the same situation. They tested 20 applicants and are taking 15 to the interview, so they got a little better pass rate than we do. Dispatch and police officers are covering shifts and getting a little taxing now, but we're getting there.
Questions to Gary? Thank you. Marcia?
Nothing.
Rosie?
Nothing.
A couple things for your information. Last week was West Side Junk Pickup. This site is East Side Junk Pickup. We've been getting some calls in because of misses, but the trash company has been keeping notes of people that put their stuff out after they've passed, or people that have not wrapped their furniture and or mattresses and things like that. So I appreciate that we have a list to go off of when people call in and say, hey, they didn't pick us up, and we can say, hey, you didn't have it out when they passed, and that's why. Obviously, there's other instances that that doesn't happen, but it is helpful. Tomorrow's Administrative Professionals Day. Thank you to my assistant, Ashley, for all of her help and assistance. Arbor Day celebrations are going on this Friday at both Giving Gardens and at Mary Raber. There is a downtown cleanup for Columbia City Connect on Saturday at 10 a.m., right, Chip?
Yes.
And State of the City Address, I know you're all excited about that, is next Friday, May the 5th, Cinco de Mayo, which also happens to be the first Friday that we'll be having in Columbia City as well. Also, just want to make a mention, just as a personal privilege, Mayor Patty Fissel from Ligonier passed away today, and she was always such a sweetheart. I hate that, but I know she was battling cancer, and so I know that she is now healed, and so I appreciate that. But we'll definitely miss her, and she was always super kind, even when I was a lowly OCRA staff member. So I have a personal connection to her. But in any case, besides that, you know. Still moving forward. As a reminder, next Tuesday is Election Day for the Northeast District only in the city, and we are not open that day. City Hall is closed that day for Election Day. Jennifer?
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do we have a sense that with the change in the procedure of having people wrap their furniture?
Sure.
And then you sent people out to remind people if they had something out, right?
Well, we've sent plenty of
Okay, that's what I'm getting at. Was it any better this year than last year?
It was definitely better this year.
Okay.
That does not mean that everybody followed the rules, but it was definitely better this year. I think we had a lot more. We did a much bigger approach to pushing information out, social media, newspaper, etc., and really honed in those last couple of weeks, like wrap your stuff. So anyway, long story short is, yes, it's better this year, much better than it was last year.
Right.
Yes.
That's good. I do think I see less things still sitting out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there did seem to be things that went out that were like,
Yes.
And if, then they would be wrapped.
If we could only figure out a way to stop the junkers from trashing things as they go looking for their treasures, that would be, that's the next thing we'd like to accomplish. So anyway.
Straps.
Anything else?
Some of them ripped the
bottom. The Arts Commission is continuing to move forward with a couple of different things that we're working on, partnering with Mayor's Office, partnering with Columbia City Connect, hopefully doing this public art project thing that's still kind of under wraps until we get it all approved. So that is all very good news.
Yeah.
We are also applying for a grant to help us afford some of the things that we want to do this year. A lot of our activity is going to be in the summer, but we're also going to be planning hopefully something in the fall as well that's not just the Columbia City thing, but a whole Whitley County thing. So continuing to elevate arts in the community, as in all kinds of arts, and emphasis on diversity of things. So there is that. The other thing that I think is probably worth bringing up, Marcia, is that we have been crafting an ordinance regarding chickens and the possibility of that. There are still many questions to be answered, so it won't be
next time. At least I've got something out there.
Yeah. There, it brought about a lot more questions once we got something sort of drafted. So.
Okay. Thank you. Ted?
I have a couple things, unless Chip covered them.
No.
Regarding the LML testing, no dice on that. Okay, so the last time they did the testing last month, I don't know if you brought it up.
I did not.
May or not, but the testing did not go well, and so they're gonna have to do some more testing on that property. And we are just on the cusp of thinking we were going to be able to open that up for proposals, and so now we're not.
Because that was already remediated, correct?
That's what, groundwater testing? Is that right?
Yes.
Well, or is it soil testing?
So
soil.
They had soil. Yeah, the soil. So they're going to do some more tests in June to see if it has alleviated the issues that they were having. Or that the test, because the tests were good, then a bad one.
Right.
So now they're going to test again in June for all those who care or don't care. And then secondly, on the Columbia City Connect, redevelopment gave them a $5,000 matching grant for, we approved a $5,000 matching grant for projects and things that they're going to be doing, like hiring another part-time person to help with all the great events that are going to be going on in the city.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Great. Thank you, Jeff.
I have nothing.
Thank you. Okay. Yep, Gary.
Deputy Chief Hodges is retiring this Friday. We'll be up here in council doing a little celebration from 11 to 1. If anybody wants to join, feel free to do so. We'll have IGA donuts.
What's his request?
IGA donuts.
IGA donuts?
thank you. For our friends from, I'm going to mess this up, La Voz Unitas? Unita? I was close? Okay. For those of you that came in late, thank you. Some of us are going to stick around to chat more. We appreciate the presentation Ed gave on that. Sorry for the miscommunication on timeline and all that kind of stuff. Anybody else in the audience that would like to say? Yes, Melanie, come on up. Name and address. You know the rule.
About chickens. Hens need roosters to lay eggs. Apparently, some people actually thought that was true, but it's not true. Hens do not need roosters to lay eggs. That's only if you want baby chicks. In fact, if you don't want baby chicks, if you roosters don't, that's actually better if you don't have a rooster, because then you can eat all the eggs. So chickens carry or spread disease. That's also not really that true. Basically, your large multi-million factory farms where they have, tight, unsanitary living conditions. But a home backyard chickens eat fleas, ticks, and mosquitoes, so they actually help protect against pests and things like that. Chickens are loud. They're not. While roosters can be the same decibel as a barking dog, laying hens at their loudest only actually reach the same decibels as a normal conversation. Chickens are... Sometimes people think that chickens are smelly. Actually, a 40-pound dog produces more waste in a day than 10 chickens. And chicken manure also makes an excellent high-nitrogen fertilizer when it's been composted, which a dog doesn't really. Property values will decrease if they're allowed. This is also a goal. 7 out of 10 of the most desirable cities featured in Forbes magazine allow backyard chickens.
Thank you, Melanie. Any other comments from the audience? Okay, with that, we will call.